ever scroll through a website and it's like, hold on, these ads are reading my mind. Like, how did they know I was just looking at vintage cars?
You're on to something there. It can feel like you're being watched, right?
Totally.
And that's what makes this whole Google antitrust trial so fascinating. We're not just talking about annoying ads. This goes way deeper.
This is about Google's whole ad tech empire.
Exactly.
Right?
It's about whether Google used its power to control not just what we see online, but how websites actually make money from our attention, especially news websites and content creators. This is about the future of the internet as we know it.
No pressure, Google, right?
Yeah.
So we've got the U.S. Justice Department taking on Google, which is a pretty big deal in itself. What are they actually accusing Google of doing?
They're saying Google has a monopoly on the technology behind most online ads. We're talking the tools publishers use to sell ad space, the platforms advertisers use to buy those ads, and the middleman, the ad exchanges, where the deals happen. The DOJ's argument is that Google strong-armed their way into controlling all of it.
So Google's like the puppet master of the internet, pulling all the strings behind the scenes.
That's the accusation. And to really get why this is such a big deal, we need to break it down a bit. The DOJ is really zeroing in on this thing called tying. Basically, they're saying Google forces publishers to use their ad server if those publishers want access to Google's massive ad network. It's this thing called DoubleClick for publishers.
DoubleClick for publishers, got it. So it's like saying, hey, you can only sell your amazing vintage car in our showroom, even if our competitors might give you a better deal, because guess what? We've got all the buyers.
Perfect analogy. And to make matters even juicier, the DOJ has some pretty compelling evidence. Internal emails from Google executives, no less. One email straight from a former DoubleClick CEO actually said, I really believe that if we can execute on this stuff, we'll be able to crush the other networks.
Talk about putting it in writing.
I know. It's like they weren't even trying to hide it. These emails, and there are more, they really show just how aggressive Google's strategy was. They were playing for keeps, aiming for that same dominance in display advertising that they already had in search.
Even if it meant potentially pushing out the competition.
Exactly. Creating an uneven playing field. And that brings us to the big question. What does this actually mean for real people?
Yeah. Is this just some abstract legal battle?
Not at all. The trial has brought some really compelling stories to light about how Google's practices have actually affected individuals and businesses. Take Stephanie Laser, for example.
Okay, who is Stephanie Laser?
So she's a former executive at News Corp, which, for those who don't know, is a major publishing house.
Big player.
Big players. And during her testimony, Laser admitted that while she personally found Google's ad server, that DFP we talked about, to be, quote, slow and clunky, she felt like a company like News Corp, they had no choice but to use it.
Because Google basically had a lock on the market.
Precisely. They were stuck with it, even if there were better options out there.
It's that fear, right?
Exactly. The fear of losing ad revenue if they even thought about going somewhere else. Some people are calling it the golden handcuffs.
Golden handcuffs, that's a good way to put it. And then there's the testimony of Izer Lipkovitz, which really made me do a double take. This is a former Google VP, someone who was in the thick of it.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, he did not hold back.
Oh, yeah. His testimony was definitely one of the most talked about moments of the whole trial. He compared Google's control over the ad tech market to, and I quote, Goldman Sachs owning the stock exchange.
So it's not just people outside of Google who are raising eyebrows.
It would seem not. Even people inside Google were seeing these potential issues. And this phrase he used, the machine won, that really stuck with me.
What do you think he meant by that?
To me, it suggests that even internally, there was this sense that Google's focus on growth, their relentless pursuit of it, might have come at a cost.
The cost being a truly fair and competitive market.
Exactly.
Okay, so we're starting to see how these accusations against Google could have real-world consequences for everyone, not just tech giants. Publishers, advertisers, even everyday internet users like you and me. But before we go any further, I think it's time we do a little jargon busting. I keep hearing terms like header bidding, last look, and I'm not sure everyone listening is fluent in Google speak.
You're telling me it's like its own language sometimes.
Right. So let's break it down. Let's go with header bidding. What is that and why should we care?
So, header bidding. Imagine you're running a website, right? Let's say it's all about those vintage cars we were talking about, and you want to sell ad space to reach those classic car enthusiasts.
Makes sense.
Header bidding is basically like opening up your ad space to bids from multiple ad networks at the same time instead of just going through Google.
So it's like a bidding war.
Exactly. And what usually happens in a bidding war?
The seller gets a better price.
You got it. So for publishers, this was kind of a big deal. But something tells me Google wasn't exactly thrilled about this new development.
I bet they weren't. Competition usually means less money for the big guy, right?
Right. You see, before header bidding came along, Google's ad exchange, it often got first dibs, and sometimes the only look, at a publisher's inventory. Huge advantage. But header bidding, it started to level the playing field a bit, and, well, Google wasn't too happy about that.
So what did they do?
They came up with something called exchange bidding.
Yeah.
Later, they renamed it to open bidding. Now, you hear that, it sounds like, okay, they're responding to header bidding, trying to make things fairer.
Right, it sounds reasonable.
But then those internal emails came out during the trial, and, well, let's just say they paint a bit of a different picture.
Uh-oh, what did the emails say?
They suggested that Google's open bidding, it wasn't really about fair competition, more like, how can we regain control here?
So they tried to co-opt the whole thing.
Basically. Some experts are saying Google tried to, let's say, borrow header bidding by creating their own version, but one that still gave them an edge.
It's like when your friend borrows your cool jacket.
Yeah.
And then tries to tell everyone it's theirs.
Exactly. And this is a big part of the DOJ's case, this kind of maneuvering. They're saying Google used their power, their clout, to stifle competition, even when it came to things like header bidding that were actually good for publishers.
So we've got header bidding, Google trying to pull a fast one, and some shady emails. What about this last look thing?
Ah, yes. Last look. Another one of those little technical details that can have a huge impact.
A little late on me.
Basically, it's this feature in Google's ad exchange that allegedly allowed them to see what the highest bids from other ad networks were.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Those bids from the competition. And then Google could swoop in at the last second and outbid them, ensuring they got the ad space.
Wait, they could see everyone else's cards. That's like playing poker and knowing exactly what everyone else has before you bet.
You got it.